Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you run a company like Sprint these days, your world is spinning very, very quickly. So much going on, including all manner of merger rumors with T-Mobile, improved quarterly earnings, more speculation that the company's brain trust may soon operate out of Silicon Valley, and then there's continuing customer defections, not to mention ongoing layoffs. Sprint CEO Dan Hesse has been described as the man who took the helm of a broken company nearly 7 years ago and turned it into a valuable property once again. He's very interested in improving the sound quality of cell phones, something that drives me nuts on a regular basis. Dan Hesse's in the studio with me, and it's a pleasure to have him here. Dan, welcome to Up to Date.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
You know, there's so much going on in your world these days. How well are you sleeping these days, Dan?
I'm sleeping pretty well. Last night we had a great rainstorm.
Yes, we did.
It was wonderful. I slept all night. Slept like a baby.
Oh, that's good. Well, we'll get to T-Mobile and mergers and SoftBank a little later. But I wanted to ask you about something that drives me, and I know a whole lot of people, absolutely crazy about the cell phone industry, which is the quality of sound that comes out of those things. I mean, you know, here we have these absolutely amazing space-age mini computers and a tin can sound. I have an inkling that drives you a little bit nutty, too, because I know Sprint is working on this and that you've just rolled out this new HD voice technology. How big a problem is this in your industry, just in general, Dan?
Well, you know, years ago when bandwidth was very limited, you know, there was a reason and also devices were the beginning of digital. You know, the algorithms weren't that good. What
Right.
we call the vocoders weren't that good. You really had to compromise in terms of sound quality on mobile devices. And it's been amazing to me, both in terms of music and particularly in terms of voice, that with all of the advances we've made in surfing and web speeds and texting.
Yeah.
You know, phones now have 1080p full HD screens, but no one was doing anything about voice. So
I can't get over it.
So we're getting ready to launch very soon, really in a matter of weeks, nationwide HD voice capability, high definition voice, which, you know, a lot of people today will say, you know, they're on a cell phone. They'll say, here, let's get off this and I'll call you back on a landline.
I've been told that cell phone CEOs actually do that from time to time.
I've been known to do it and won't anymore because with HD voice, it'll sound better and noticeably better than your landline. So we're taking the typical cell phone call, which is really compressed to 4 octaves.
I was going to ask you about that.
And,
right.
And with HD voice, it has not only background noise cancellation. So like if you're in a crowded restaurant or an airport, it really reduces that. But it takes it from 4 octaves to 7 octaves. It basically adds 2 octaves at the bottom end and another octave at the top end.
Yeah.
And the sound is dramatically different and better. And, of course, we're also putting better, if you will, speakers into the phones. And, you know, with some devices, you know, better earbuds and what have you to take advantage
yeah.
of high-definition voice.
How big a problem was the speaker itself, the quality of the speaker?
If you take a look at most cell phones, you can't even find the speaker. I mean, it's so small.
Right.
And, again, they're dealing with, you know, limited real estate and didn't think it was a big issue. And given that the quality of the signal that was coming through was so poor, whether it's a voice call or, let's say, a compressed, it could be like internet radio
yeah.
or a compressed MP3 file, why put a good speaker in a device? So if you were to take a look at, you know, a lot of new smartphones, you're seeing front-facing stereo speakers, larger speakers, because basically speakers move air. And there is a direct correlation generally between the size of the speaker and the sound quality that you're going to get.
Yeah.
So that's something that we're doing on the more advanced phones now is creating better speakers and also better signals. So the sound quality is going to get a lot better.
Sprint CEO Dan Hesse is our guest. You know, CNN just said this about your HD voice technology. Dan, I want to describe this and get you to respond. You'll never mistake the sound of an HD voice call for someone in the same room as you. At a demonstration event in New York recently, the difference between a conventional call and an HD voice call was noticeable, though not dramatic. The HD voice sound was definitely clearer, though there was still a bit of the tinny, echoey quality that you sometimes get with Skype calls. That sound about right?
I don't think so. It really depends.
You think it's better than that?
I think it's better than that, and part of it is also what phone you're using. So all of the devices that we've been selling, practically all of, we'll call it the medium to high-end smartphones that we've been selling for about the last, let's say, 15 to 18 months, have been enabled with HD voice. Now, waiting for the, because what we want to do is when we turn the network on, And by the way, we turned the Kansas City network on. So if you happen to be a Sprint customer who's talking to another Sprint customer and both of you have phones that are, let's say, a year old or slightly more, you know, just a little bit over a year old or less, you're likely getting an HD voice experience. But also part of it, and we talked about this earlier, is how good is the speaker in the phone? So if you have something like the HTC device, which has good speakers in it, or are listening with a nice set of earbuds or a nice set of headphones, you will be able to tell a noticeable difference in the call quality.
You know, sound quality clearly is a big deal with you, Dan. I just noticed that Sprint is partnering with smartphone maker HTC and audio tech company Harman on a Sprint exclusive phone, and get the name of this, the HTC One M8. Sounds like something James Bond would have used, yeah. The Harman Kardon edition, which will be available next month. And pitch this phone to me.
The
HTC One M8.
Yeah, it's the first really audiophile phone that's ever been made. You know, I've been in the industry, 17 years, and we're talking about, you know, how technology has changed and moved. And MP3s and kind of streaming music for phones was created for 2G. And we went from 2G to 3G with no changes or improvements. We went from 3G to 4G.
Yeah.
And so you have much faster networks that can deliver larger files. So the files, basically, the music files were tremendously compressed.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to do that, as well as memory was very precious on those devices. And now, let's say this particular device, if you use the extra SD card slot, you have 160 gigabytes of storage because, you know, big music files take up more storage. So they have, you know, separate power amplifiers for the headphones and for front-facing stereo speakers.
Mm-hmm.
It plays high-resolution FLAC files, 24-bit, 192 kilohertz, these really big audiophile quality files. And the audiophile community, they've been getting these phones now, have just been giving it unbelievably positive reviews.
Well, you're an audiophile yourself, aren't you?
I am. I like to think of myself as one. I've been an audio nut ever since my dad came back from the Vietnam War with a bunch of audiophile equipment in the mid-60s that he had bought in the PX, Japanese equipment, reel-to-reels and what have you.
Yeah.
And I've been a sound nut ever since.
So you've got a cool system at home, perhaps?
I do.
Yeah, like Bill Shapiro, you know, who works here, he's got an incredible system. You do too, it sounds like. Yeah. And you just enjoy it?
Enjoy it very much. And
yeah.
And what's happened is with the younger generation, music has to be portable. I have two teenage boys,
mm-hmm.
but yet they have to make this huge compromise or traditionally to take music and have it be portable. And what's happened in the audiophile community in recent years is digital music has become great. You get digital downloads in very, very high quality fashion that you can play on your home system. And, you know, I was thinking, well, why on earth can't these same files go on the cell phone?
Yeah.
And there's no reason why not. So that's what we worked with Harman Kardon and HTC to do, was take these, because there are all these file sites now, HD Tracks, iTracks, where you download your favorite music,
yeah.
uncompressed, which, by the way, is much better than a compact disc,
mm-hmm.
much better,
mm.
uncompressed, and then you can take it on your cell phone. And so not only did we put the other things I've described on this device, but we also provide a really premium set of earbuds, because very often the weak link are those what we call throwaway earbuds
yeah.
that come with the cell phone. And so we wanted to give a premium set of earbuds. The other thing that Harman did was, so many people have libraries of MP3s, as well as we'll listen to Spotify or Pandora
right.
or what have you streaming. They worked for years on some very sophisticated algorithms, a system called Clarify, which figures out without enhancing, like boosting the bass, boosting the treble, actually figures out what data points, what sound, when they compressed it and took out a lot of the noise and compressed it, what was taken out. And
mm-hmm.
it's amazing how much better your MP3 or Spotify will sound.
What does an HTC One M8 cost?
It costs, if you buy it basically without a contract, it's $679.
Oh, wow.
Which is, you know, bright kind of a
yeah
between the least expensive and the next iPhone, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And with a contract, it's $230 with a 2-year contract. So it's about $30 premium to the typical smartphone. But just the headphones, the earphones themselves that we put in there, bought separately, would retail for $149.
Hmm.
Okay, so it's a you know, we've really tried to make this attractive to get it going. This is missionary work for us.
What's the market for this as far as you know?
I think it's anybody who listens to music on their cell phone. Mm-hmm. Anybody.
So potentially huge.
Huge.
You're the first one out of the gate with this, it sounds like.
Yes, we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one of those opportunities that we saw. And also, I mean, there's the CEO of HTC. I know he's an audiophile. I served on a board together in past, actually Embark, which was headquartered here in Kansas mm-hmm. City, with the CEO of Harman, mm-hmm. which is the best really consumer audio company. And so it was just a matter of getting those guys together because they're all music guys and saying, hey, why can't we do this in a smartphone?
Can you get your teenage kids? Are they interested in this new sound quality? Are they buying in? Because that demographic seems to have been, you wonder if they're lost forever when it comes to the joys of great sound. Because you and I are of a generation when great speakers and all that stuff really rocked our boats. Mm-hmm. My sons, I wonder the extent to which they can get excited about this.
Yeah, and they definitely are. okay. I have two teenage boys, but they will only listen to music on their smartphone. They don't listen to music any other way. And it bothered me as a dad because when I was their age, I was so excited about music, sound quality, albums. And I remember in college, I have a college freshman, everybody hung out in the room of the guy who had the best stereo.
Course,
that's where
you
hung.
That's what you did.
But there's no real appreciation, if you will, generally in that generation for sound quality. So I've exposed my sons just to better headphones and earbuds, and they notice that, and better portable Bluetooth, because they'll only listen to speakers that they can take with them that are portable, better sounding ones, and they notice right away. So I am very optimistic. And as I looked at the market, that's one of the reasons that we focused on this. And they listen to services like Spotify, and they could tell right away that Spotify sounds better through better headphones and with, you know, Clarify algorithms and what have you. So I'm very optimistic, but it'll take some time. This isn't going to be a big hit overnight.
Dan Hesse, the Sprint CEO, is in the studio with me here this morning. You know, Dan, how taxing is it to run a company as large as Sprint and one that's in the midst of so much change, turmoil, and all of that right now? What's it like?
Well, it is a 24/7 job.
Is it?
It really is. I mean, what I do is, and I get kidded a lot. I have, you know, both my boys played baseball, and my son now plays basketball, and you know, I'm in the stands on my smartphone or sometimes with my laptop. And that's one of the great things about baseball. There's a lot of breaks in the action, or when your son's in the dugout or something, and I can get work done.
Yeah.
So I really do try very hard to balance my personal life and work life. But this job isn't for everybody. It's just not. You have to really love it. Because it's a lot of hours, long days, and also digital technology. I can say our technology has actually made the job worse because you're never away. I mean, you are in communication 24/7.
Tell me about it. That's been one of the great stories of our times, I think. You know, USA Today once described you as Jimmy Stewart-like with a steely core that belies his nice guy image. That sound right?
That's probably fair. I really do. I mean, my parents both grew up in the Midwest. It's one of the reasons we enjoy living here in Kansas City and raising our kids here. It's just how well people treat one another. I like that, and it's the way I was raised. But you can't run a company in an industry as competitive and fast moving as ours without being, if you will, decisive and being willing to make some very hard decisions.
Within weeks of arriving at Sprint in 2007, you released three top executives, including the person who had been acting CEO. You announced plans to cut 4,000 jobs and jettison underperforming stores. And you said this at the time, accountability is a big thing with me. Tell me about accountability.
Well, one of the issues that I think Sprint did have is, you know, when I got there, I kept asking people, well, who made that decision and who was responsible for that or who was accountable for that? And accountability really wasn't in place. And my management style is one where I like to treat people the way I'd like to be treated, which is I'd like to be held accountable, but I like to be left alone.
Let them do their jobs.
Let them
as
do
long
their
as they're
job.
Performing.
Delegate. Yeah. You make the decisions. I will delegate to you. So accountability is really kind of a two-edged sword, in that, you know, or delegation is, where I think people like it because they enjoy their job and they have a lot of respect. But if you don't perform, if you make, you know, I want people to make, it's okay to make the occasional mistake, because if you're not, don't make any mistakes, you're not pushing the envelope hard enough. But if somebody consistently underperforms, and I think everybody understands it, then okay, you had your shot. It's almost like sports. I'll put somebody else on the field. And people understand that. I'm very clear. So people know what they're being measured on. And actually, we do it every quarter, but every year we do these employee attitude surveys. And we measure what are our 10 cultural imperatives, accountability being one of them, what mm-hmm. we stand for. And that gets the only area that is rated higher than accountability in terms of what they think we're very strong in is integrity.
So when you go to work on the day you've got to release those executives, is your stomach churning, or is that just something you do as part of the job because you've got to do it?
My stomach churns, and you know, you asked earlier about sleeping. That's when I lose sleep, when we let anybody go. If even though you have to be willing to make those kinds of decisions, if you're a CEO, if you can't make them, you're in the wrong job as well, because somebody has to, those tough ones. But if it's easy for you to lay people off or to say, you know, goodbye, you're in the wrong job. So I care deeply, and I don't do it, I don't do it flippantly. It's something I really think about. It does bother me, but the company needs it. Somebody has to make those decisions.
You know, there's a lot of talk these days, and you've heard it, Dan, about CEO compensation. Last year, your compensation was said to be almost $50 million. People will wonder, you know, is CEO compensation too high?
Well, I won't get into the way they compute that,
yeah,
because it's done over multiple years, and it's not what, you know, believe me, it doesn't look what I get from the from the IRS and what have you. It doesn't
it's a
look
different any number.
Yeah, yeah. And my pay stub doesn't look anything like that. But that's how much, you know, well, anyway.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's just like, you know, our athletes paid too much, our actors paid too much. It is supply and demand. And, you know, company value does change by many billions of dollars per year, you know, in terms of shareholder value based upon the decisions CEOs make.
Yeah.
So it's just it's a market, it's private enterprise. And if a lot of CEOs, if some other company offers them a lot more money, they're going to go and take that job. It's no different than anything in private industry. CEOs are well paid. I'm not going to argue with that. But it's amazing how many – well, there's really a lot of people who wouldn't want the CEO lifestyle. You were asking about it earlier. There's tremendous pressure. There's lots of hard decisions that come with it. By the way, I'm not complaining or making excuses. It is 24/7. So there's a lot that comes with the job that you do give up some things for, you know, for it.
You know, if there is a bad year, Dan, at the company, I mean, is your compensation – does it wind up getting adjusted to reflect that performance?
Yes. 90% of my compensation is – performance-based. And see, that's the reason, you know, when they say this is how much – it's like almost a sports contract. If they win the MVP and the Cy Young and this is how much –
that's the number.
That's the number.
Mm-hmm.
So roughly 10% is salary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, each year, okay, I'm going to get 10% of that number for working. By the way, if I don't perform well, the shareholders and the board is going to get rid of me, just like a head coach in baseball if the company doesn't perform.
Mm-hmm.
Job security isn't great in CEO jobs, which I think you know that it's a bit of a revolving door. But anyway, 90% of it is variable based upon the company's performance and the objectives that the board of directors sets for me as the CEO.
Let's get into some of the news going on right now with Sprint, Dan. You're hearing so much about it. We all are. The merger with T-Mobile, because, you know, the Star and many other news outlets reported just last week that many of the details of a merger have already been worked out. No final deal was said to be in place, but even a dollar figure was kicking around, $32 billion. This is a big deal in the wireless industry, Dan. So are those rough parameters of this roughly accurate?
Well, I can't comment on media speculation, and generally don't M&A and what have you. But what I will say is what I've been saying consistently for years, and I think that the wireless industry could become more competitive and would be better for consumers if you had a third strong –
three strong ones instead of what you have now.
Yeah, right now I think we have a duopoly of AT&T and Verizon, and then there's a huge gap in size and there's Sprint and T-Mobile. And I think the big two would react more in a positive, competitive way for consumers if they had a strong, you know, number three. So I think the structure of the industry could be better and more competitive and better for consumers if there was a third strong player rather than a very distant number three and number four.
But yet you hear that if, in fact, I'm underlining the word if this merger were to come about, that it's still going to be a tough sell with federal regulators.
I think there would be some there'd be a lot of dialogue and some tough selling to do in Washington. You're absolutely right. I think there's just a perception that four is better than three. So four competitors is better than three competitors. Mm-hmm. Rather than thinking about it, well, maybe three strong competitors is better than two strong and two weaker. So there would be some sales work required in Washington, no question. It would. There are some skeptics in Washington.
You know, news reports also indicated that any announcement about all this wouldn't come until next month, meaning July. Does that sound reasonable to you?
I can't comment.
All right. One thing that you have commented publicly on is this idea that you'd be okay not running the combined company if indeed a merger happens. Why not?
I was asked the question.
You've talked about it publicly.
Yeah, I have, which is and by the way, no decisions have been made. But I have, you know, I'm 60 years old. I've been working, in this job for,
almost 7 years.
Yeah, almost 7 years, which is a long period of time for a CEO to be to be in one job. I've been in this industry, really the telecom industry, for my entire career, which, by the way, I could continue in. You know, I just look at what I want to do with my life. I've got a high school son who's going to be a sophomore. My father's getting older. There's just lots of things to do. So the question is, would I? Basically, I would be happy either way. Mm-hmm. I might end up staying at Sprint, and if that were the case, I'd be very happy to do that. If it was better for the company that it be someone else, I have a lot of alternatives which look good. So
could you stay with the company if you weren't the top guy?
Very unlikely. No, that's hard to envision.
If you did leave the company, you're talking about these other things you might do. What might you do? What expand on that a little bit? Your dad, take care of your dad, maybe spend more time with the kids. I mean, is that really what you're looking at?
There's lots of possibilities.
Sounds nice
there's
to me.
there's running other companies. You know, you can see my passion around digital music. There's lots to do in that arena. There's boards of directors. There's travel. You know, I go. You know, when I start thinking about it, I want the next decade of my life just to be wonderful, and there's lots of great choices.
Safer ground. Why would a merger make sense for the average cell phone user in this country? What's in it for him or her?
Right now you have the big two players who generally charge at a premium to the others. And I think if you had a strong, and generally the price competition comes from Sprint and from T-Mobile. And if theoretically there were such a combination, I think the AT&T's and Verizon's would react more and be more competitive if there was a price competitor that was bigger, stronger, and more threatening.
So
the other thing, by the way, one other item I would say is that if you take a look at the network coverage of a T-Mobile and a Sprint. It's not as, in terms of 4G, LTE, or what have you, especially if you live in more rural areas or suburbs, we're all going to build out the major cities. The footprint isn't as large either, so the big guys don't have competition in those smaller markets. In the big markets they do, but in the smaller markets they don't, because you need a certain number of customers, if you will, on the airplane, who's like an airplane, to economically say it's okay to go build that. We're kind of in a scale game.
Yeah.
So if you could combine the customers, let's say theoretically of a T-Mobile and Sprint, that combined company could build a larger, more competitive, 4G network. So America would benefit by having more locations with three really strong networks competing.
So bottom line, the consumer is better off if the merger occurs.
Yes.
No question about it.
Well, that's our belief. Mm-hmm. I mean, others, you know, have other opinions, and I'm not going to say, you know, I'm not going to disparage their point of view. I think a lot of dialogue's required on this, but yes, from our perspective, when we look at it, we think the consumer is certainly going to be, would be better off.
Let's do this, Dan. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation here with Sprint CEO Dan Hesse. We'll talk about the impact of a possible merger on the Overland Park campus. We'll talk about SoftBank. We'll talk about 4G and a whole lot more. And we'll take your phone calls, too, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888 if you have a question for Sprint's Dan Hesse. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking with Sprint CEO Dan Hesse, our number 816-235-2888, and our email address up-to-date at kcur.org. Dan, a listener asks, we're talking 4G networks. When will 5G be developed and rolled out?
Well, there's a lot of debate right now in the industry in terms of what will constitute 5G.
Yeah.
The technology that we will call 5G. What we're rolling out now with what we call Sprint Spark is, the reason we call it Spark is we really see it almost as 4.5G, in that we built these special 8T8R radios, 8 transmit, 8 receive in a box, where the radios that are out there in the networks now are 2T2R.
Wow.
So we've gone from really 4 to 16 radios.
Mm-hmm.
We're aggregating more spectrum for fast speed. So by the fourth quarter of 2015, you should be able to get about 150 megabits per second to your cell phone.
Wow.
at the end of 15, mm-hmm. which is just bringing a lot more spectrum online. That's what the Clearwire acquisition was all about. We bought this huge swath of spectrum, and it's going to take us till then to be able to deploy all that. And we're putting more radios in the handsets. So in each generation, generally what you see, and by the way, 1G was analog. 2G was when digital came out, and you heard acronyms like GSM and CDMA.
Right.
3G was when you got kind of high-speed data, and 4G is really data that's fast enough for video and music download, and that's kind of the state of the art now when you hear an acronym for 4G like LTE.
Mm-hmm.
Within each of those generations, there's a lot of progress made. It's kind of like the first Blu-ray player versus the latest Blu-ray player, the first DVD versus the last one. So anyway, we're pushing the envelope, and what we're deploying right now in Kansas City is a lot faster than the early 4G LTE networks that were deployed.
It's been said that Sprint has this long-term capability to potentially deliver wireless download links of up to 200 megabits per second to U.S. homes, far faster than today's average speeds, even for hardwire broadband. I mean, you could potentially, Dan, break up the broadband market, but you aren't bullish on that idea. Why not?
Well, we're going after, if you will, the mobile customer's use. I think there will be customers who decide, you know, I don't need both, if you will, fixed broadband and mobile. So I think there's an essence of Venn diagram, if you will, between what you think of as home internet versus mobile internet. And a number of customers in between will choose one or the other. And we think most will choose mobile. So there will be cross elasticity, and we will get customers who will choose mobile instead. But that's not what we're focused on. We're not like going after, if you will, Time Warner and Comcast's customers. We're going after, if you will, Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile's, you know, customers with just there's just higher expectations going to be expected for mobile devices for, like, you know, we talked about high definition audio for example. So it's not that I'm not bullish on it, but the other thing is, as customers want truly, you know, they high definition 4K and what have you, that puts a lot of load. You can deliver that more cheaply for those kinds of bandwidths over terrestrial, over, let's say, Google Fiber here in Kansas City.
Right.
We're not going to be able, with as fast as our networks are going to be, we're not going to be able to compete with, let's say, a Google Fiber.
But it's been said that your parent company's CEO, that you and he are in different places on this in terms of pursuing this, you know, this faster speeds and what it might mean. Am I right about that?
No, that couldn't be more wrong.
Okay.
We have been...
I've read it.
And I think what you read is... a comment that one analyst made who reported on a report that he read, and that person had read something written by an analyst who had heard me talk. And so it was literally, it was four. I know exactly what you're talking about. It was like telling the secret to the fourth person in the room. Got it wrong. We could not be more consistent on that.
Okay. And going back to 4G, I mean, it's been said that you're still behind on the upgrade. Obviously, such a huge development for Sprint. How is the rollout proceeding? When you said, the fourth quarter of 2015?
Well, the build, before we're done, will continue actually for many years, but the biggest change in terms of high-speed data will occur in the fourth quarter of 15.
Okay.
But also in the middle, I just mentioned that we're getting weeks away from launching nationwide HD voice. So there are a number of milestones along the way. It's like we're never done. That's why I actually use the analogy of 4.5G, where we're going to constantly be evolving the network with new technology. So we have these AT8R radios, which I mentioned earlier, which the one with 16 radios in the box. We're field testing those now. And those will start to get lit up with real traffic like in the third quarter. So we're continually advancing it. So there are certain milestones that we get finished with on certain dates. So most of the voice network replacement, because one of the things we did to build this terrific network that we're building is we've ripped out and replaced the entire network. What we had is we had a Sprint network, we had a Nextel network, and a Clearwire network. Mm. And to build a great network, rather than kind of trying to glue them all together, we decided we're going to rip it all out, and also because we're so focused on green, even the latest technology in 3G is so much more energy efficient than the early 3G equipment that we bought. We have commitments to reduce greenhouse gases and what have you. We really it would be very difficult to achieve that because the network is our big energy user as a company. Think of it as a giant computer. The network uses a lot of energy. We could rip everything out and put in much more energy efficient equipment, even for voice.
Mm-hmm.
So the voice network will be largely finished by the middle of this year, the rip and replace, what you think of as 3G. And then we'll gradually be adding 4G and what you call 4.5G over the next couple of years.
A lot of stuff.
Well, it is a lot of stuff.
All this changed has resulted in some drop calls and some lost in customer base.
Yes.
You lost 467,000 customers in the first quarter, and yet operations earned a profit of $420 million, the best showing in 7 years. How do you square those two factoids there?
Well, one of the big positives about having SoftBank as an investor is it has really changed our investor base. In that, they have a long-term plan. I mean, Masa-san talks about his 100-year plan. So this network we're building, it's taking longer to do it right. We use the analogy, almost like the three little pigs. We're the one that's building that brick house, on the end of the road. It's going to take longer, but it's the great permanent house. And so in the short term, in 2013 and 2014, you're absolutely right. Because we're ripping everything out, we have, we're dropping more calls and there has been more service disruption. It's akin to like if you're going to a highway construction here in Kansas City, you might have a 4-lane road, and while it's being constructed, it goes down to 2-lane. So service actually gets worse.
Yeah.
But then when you open it up, it goes to 16 lanes and everybody's really thrilled you built the highway. And that's basically what we're doing. So you are seeing subscriber losses and some significant ones in certain quarters in 2013 and 2014.
Right.
As a result of that is we go city by city and rip out the old and put in the new. But when we're done, let's say especially in the 2015 timeframe, especially with the voice replacement.
Yeah.
Because once the voice network is ripped out and replaced, the other stuff that we're putting in, the data we're talking about, the faster data speeds, that won't be customer affecting. That's put on new spectrum. So it's just all of a sudden you'll see an extra 2 lanes or 4 lanes open up. We're not going to be constricting what you're used to. But during that period of time, we've obviously focused a lot on expenses and cost reduction so we can continue to fund. So the network, it costs a lot of money to build this network. So we have to produce the earnings to plow right back into the network to build a greater network. So if you want to build a great network, you have to focus on expenses so that you have the money to put into capital.
I think, Dan, I'm starting to get the picture here why you say you work 24/7. That's starting to come through. The picture is starting to become clear to me. Let's go to some phone calls, 816-235-2888. Dan Hesse from Sprint is in the studio here with me. Let's go to Valerie from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. Just wanted to say that I have been a customer of Sprint for 14 years. The first 3 years was as both an employee and a consumer, and then the last 11 years have been as a consumer. One of the things that I have noted, and I will stand by Sprint on, is that they have always honored their mission, integrity being at the top of that list. Even as one of those who was a part of a layoff, I can say that Sprint as a company has stood by their employees and their consumers, and that's why I remain a loyal customer. Look forward to the merger, if it should happen, because I think as a company that has stood up for their mission, for the things that they stand by, they will quickly rise to the top.
All right.
Thank you, Valerie.
Valerie, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's see. Wendell wants to know, what is the current call coverage of Sprint, i.e. the percentage of the continental U.S., Hawaii, and Alaska? What are the plans to make it even better? We've been talking about that. But what's the current call coverage of Sprint right now, Dan?
Well, we cover about 97% of Americans, mm-hmm. and but not all with high-speed data. So what you're going to see over time is the coverage that we provide through not only our own network, but we also provide roaming. So in some rural areas, we partner with rural phone companies so that when you're in some of these smaller towns, your cell phone will still work.
Right.
But over time, we'll be providing Spark or LTE high speed to more and more of the United States.
Claudia writes us this at updatedate@kcur.org. Can Sprint offer any help to rural residents in getting high-speed residential service equal to what urban dwellers have?
Well, per my comment earlier, this is one of the issues associated with a potential merger of a T-Mobile and a Sprint. If something like that were to possibly occur,
right.
is the economic model gets much better, and rural customers could expect a much higher likelihood of getting a high-speed network built in rural territories if the merger was to go through.
Again, our phone number here for Dan Hesse, 816-235-2888. Your questions about the cell phone industry, the future of Sprint. Robert emailed us a slew of questions. Dan, this was one. Why is the Sprint chairman claiming U.S. Internet consumer service lags behind many other industrialized countries? And if Sprint buys T-Mobile, that will make Internet service better. How naive does he think U.S. consumers and regulators are?
Well, if you do look at internet speeds and a lot of the industrialized companies and the United States, and also the issue that was raised earlier about depends upon where you live, we are not near the top of the list in the United States. And the network I've been talking about, which is Spark, and the reason we bought Clearwire, what we want to do at Sprint and with SoftBank is build really the fastest wireless internet network in the world, because we have the potential to do it with our spectrum holdings, but we don't have enough revenues or customers to justify building it broadly. So we could provide it, and this is a type of digital divide called the have and have not, which are the cities and the more affluent areas might get it. But some of the, let's say, more challenged areas, not only in cities but rural areas, unless you have a certain number of customers, you just can't justify putting those cell towers up. So if – I think what Chairman Son is saying is that if you allow the T-Mobile and Sprint customer bases to combine, you can build this great Spark network more broadly to more Americans, and it would be the gold standard – of the world in terms of high-speed wireless internet.
I know we're playing a lot of speculative questions here today, given the state of where Sprint is with this potential merger with T-Mobile, Dan. But lots of people around here will wonder about the health of the company and maintaining the Overland Park campus as a viable operation for the metro if, in fact, this merger goes through. What happens to the Sprint campus if, in fact, again, underlying the word if, in fact, a merger occurs?
Well, I wouldn't want to speculate on that because, quite frankly, that hasn't been something that we've spent even time talking about. I can say that honestly, we really haven't. There have been a lot of media reports and speculation about even forget the merger. You're moving to Silicon Valley what have you. That's never even come up in conversation internally. We do meet often with SoftBank in Silicon Valley. Because
more often than once a month sometimes.
Yeah, we generally go out once a month and meet in Silicon Valley. They have offices there. And it's good for us because I go there regularly. I go there at least once a month just to meet with my partners and startups because so much innovation takes place there. And it's shorter, if you will, to fly from Tokyo to San Francisco than it is to come to Kansas City, and there are a lot more flights and what have you. So we actually, it works out great for Sprint executives because we like to call Silicon Valley halfway because it is.
You're getting a better deal there.
We are. We're getting a better deal. And so I think what's happening is they know we meet Silicon Valley regularly because it's a good, if you will, halfway point.
Yeah.
But it also gives us both companies. SoftBank has to come to Silicon Valley from time to time because so many important companies are there. Google, Apple, Facebook, you go right down the list, Cisco.
Yeah.
The companies they work with, the companies that we work with. So it's just a logical place for us to meet on a regular basis.
I'm not a business guy, but it seems like not an illogical leap to assume then that if a merger would occur and there is this culture being built in Silicon Valley, that might indeed be the place where Sprint sends most of its people at some point if this thing comes together.
Well, there could be a larger presence in Silicon Valley over time just because of the nature of Silicon Valley. But if you just look at the economics of you've got 8,000 people on the campus and the cost of living and salaries, you're right down the list, is so much less and a lot of people won't move.
Yeah.
It doesn't make economic sense to just pick up and move a headquarters out, especially to, quite frankly, a high-cost state, one that's not particularly business friendly, they're obviously a great innovation capability, if you will, in Silicon Valley. So it's not necessarily an either or. So increasing our presence in Silicon Valley, there could be some jobs that move there, but I can say that we haven't had conversations about moving a significant number of jobs out there.
Back to some phone calls for Sprint CEO Dan Hesse. Let's go to Russ from Bonner Springs. Russ, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, quick interrogative. I live about 22 miles west of the state line on the I-70 corridor, and I've got really good data that I barely use, and I can't make voice calls from anywhere in my neighborhood. I can make them from the urban core. Is there any plans to help out or actually serve customers whose only view of a high-rise is silos and other people's cell towers? I will take my answer via the airwaves.
Thank you, Russ.
I don't know specifically where you are and whether we used to have good voice coverage there or not. Part of this rip and replace that I've been describing has affected cell phone coverage in areas around the metro as we, if you will, decommission the old equipment and put in new equipment.
Right.
But I'd have to look specifically at where you are to know what our plans are there. But we try to provide. Kansas City in this region is our hometown, so we take our service goals here very, very seriously.
Interesting question. Via Twitter here at KCUR up to date. Dan at Outmouth writes this: how long has Dan known of so-called NSA backdoor wiretaps and data collection, and how does he justify the violation?
I can't make any comments specifically with respect to NSA. I will say that Sprint takes customer privacy very seriously. We were recognized, as well as some people were even ridiculed Sprint for our very in the industry for having very strong opt-in versus opt-out policies with respect to using customer data for things like mobile advertising. So we have gone to great lengths to protect customer information, but we do comply with U.S. law.
You can't comment on it because, just so I understand.
Well, national security. NSA, there are, if you will, call them non-disclosure privacy issues with respect to the government that we can't or don't comment on. But that being said, we go to great lengths to to protect customer information. But we do comply with U.S. law. That is, if there is a legal subpoena or what have you for data, we do comply with the law.
We have another tweet here. How is Sprint attempting to compete in the enterprise? I'm not sure I know what he's referring to. And what is the direct customer benefit to Sprint acquiring T-Mobile? We've talked about that already. But what is how is Sprint attempting to compete in the enterprise?
Well, the enterprise is generally what you think of as a business customer, usually a medium to large business customer for the listener.
Right.
And it's very important for us to get, if you will, the business of business.
Yeah.
Because very often what you see today is that you somebody's cell device, they have the same device for both business and personal. So if you lose the business account, and you're likely to lose the, if you will, the consumer business as well. So so marketing has really changed, if you will, where there's what we call bring your own device is becoming a normal in business. You bring your cell phone and then but typically most companies, and this is what we work on in Sprint, is make sure that most companies will choose two or three national companies that their employees can buy a phone from and it'll be compatible with the corporate network. So it's important for us to be one of those two or three that are selected by companies. The other thing we do is we do provide what's called landline service, typically long distance connectivity, internet
right.
connectivity to business locations. And that's an important part of getting, if you will, our larger share of wallet for large business customers.
Back to some calls here. Bill from Olathe. Bill, you're on with Dan Hesse. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Great. Thanks, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
My question is specifically regarding innovation, Kansas City versus Silicon Valley. It's never going to end. You know that. I've been a loyal Sprint customer for 20 years. I also developed a product for Sprint back in 96, 97, 98, pitched it, and you guys went against my product and went with Palm Pilot. Back then, the idea was they're going to stay with the walled garden approach with the internet. Now that, you know, that decision has been basically made by all carriers, the walled garden approach has sort of failed. Do you think staying in Kansas City is justifiable when it comes to innovation, because you're really competing with AT&T and Verizon, and their innovation centers are not here in Kansas City,
right.
neither is Sprint's. So I know the labor cost is 40% versus 55% in Silicon Valley, but
let me get a response from Dan. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, Sprint's one of the most innovative companies in the world. We're granted an average of over 2 U.S. patents every business day.
Wow.
We're granted more patents than any company headquartered in either Kansas or Missouri. And most of our patents are generated out of our labs and facilities and operations in Overland Park. Although we do have a development lab in Burlingame, California, which is Silicon Valley. We have one in Reston, Virginia. You know, we innovate everywhere, but we're extraordinarily innovative. And that's why you see so many firsts coming from Sprint.
You know, how has, you know, the merger with SoftBank gone in terms of the cultural differences between the Japanese and the American way of doing business, Dan? Seamless, or have there been a few rough spots along the way?
Well, you know, there are differences between,
yeah.
You know, Japan and the United States, I think both culturally as well as, you know, the way we do business. And it's one of the reasons we meet every month. And actually last night we had a video call. So we generally have a video call once a week and we meet face-to-face every month. And it is a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
But what we really have in common, I mentioned this earlier, and has been a real plus for us, what I like about the Japanese business approach is it's more long-term. U.S. business tends to be quarter-to-quarter, and
yes.
that is refreshing
yes.
in our industry. So that part's a big plus.
I bet. Well, Dan, it's just been an absolute pleasure to have you here. Thanks for taking the time to come in and answer so many questions across an array of so many different topics. We sure appreciate it, and good luck in the weeks ahead.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure.